Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Good morning. Welcome to Monday. It's actually my Friday in terms of the day job, but this is why my week is so screwed up. But I got a couple of days to work on all the many things I'm working on. I'm not exactly sure if Shannon's joining us this morning. Normally, Shannon Rice of the Milton City Council drops in. We get an idea of what's happening locally. And I always find it interesting, too. You know, you may think, especially if you're in, Nebraska or Oregon or any number of other places where we are heard, you know, why do we do such local stuff? Well, our local stuff is your local stuff. You know, I don't think things change that much, especially in the smaller towns and cities across the country. A lot of the problems are fairly similar. And so that's why I like having Shannon on. There's something I discovered on the news. Actually, well, I didn't discover it. I mean, it's something I found on the news just this morning. And it was, it sort of stems from a post I made on my Facebook page. Now, I have to tell you about the Facebook page because this is fascinating. I have the most wonderful friends in the world. And so what's really cool is that I've got this 30-day lockdown, this 30-day censorship. I don't call it Facebook jail because I didn't do anything wrong. In fact, all I did was comment on the people who were spewing such vitriol and fake news and horrible stuff. And I just said, hey, you know, I'm going to call you on it. You're wrong. You're lying. You're not, you know, even remotely close to the truth. And I don't think we should really, you know, I don't think you should be doing this. I mean, well, maybe it's a little stronger than that. But, you know, point being, I invited these folks on and they basically shut me down. So they're not coming on my page anymore. But what's happened is something that I never expected. And, you know, the Chinese saying, you know, the character for crisis, you know, and opportunity are flippable or opposites. So in other words, you know, one side, if you write it one way, it's crisis. If you write it the other way, it's opportunity. So opportunity is the flip side of crisis. And so I can't post, but apparently all my friends can. So that's exactly what's happening. So we're getting all kinds of great posts and wonderful things are going on. And so one of the posts I made, I think it's either yesterday or the day before, I said, vaccination is segregation. All right. And nobody commented. It just kind of sat there as this beautiful rose background, you know, and all this. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, I guess nobody's really caught on to exactly what I'm talking about. All right. Because the world is going to be divided into the vaccinated and the non-vaccinated, as opposed to the vaccinated and the natural. Okay. So I don't like the terms, you know, vaccinated and un, because un implies that you're not, you know, what you should be. And so this is going to be a major theme of Dr. Fascist. And the techno-fascists and probably use that word. I need another technocrats, all right? And that'd be a great name for a rock band, you know, Dr. Fascist and the Technocrats. Sorry, I've got a new band. We had a great practice Saturday, so I have my outlet, and so I'll be able to rock and roll my way out of politics, you know, once we start hitting the club circuit down here on the Gulf Coast, the Emerald Coast, the most beautiful coastline in the world. And so that's going to be kind of fun. But I post this because more and more I'm seeing this, that there are those who are vaccinated and those who are not. And those who are not seem to be doing a lot better. You know, the whole idea of herd immunity. I never like the word herd either. It implies we're a bunch of cattle. So I would say natural immunity. All right. So those of us who practice natural immunity, who, you know, get our sunshine and our vitamin D, you know, in my case, I have my zinc elderberry lozenges and, you know, other stuff if necessary, if, you know, if I feel sick, but I've been feeling fine. You know, like I say, I think COVID went through this area, the Milton, Pensacola, the Gulf Coast area of Florida a year ago, December. And so it was the end of December, right after Christmas, we all got sick and we all had this horrible cough, and it's right on my shows. If you want to go back to those December, you know, late December, early January shows when I sounded terrible, I believe that was COVID. We didn't even know what it was yet. But a couple of days rest and I was fine, you know, and I'm over 60. So, you know, it's really a lot of it's your state of your health, your genetics, your immune system, and all those things play into it. But as the whole, you know, the virus is real, as I say, but the government response to it was completely a hoax, because the lockdowns, the mask, everything else that went into it. And people have been segregated into those who wear masks and those who are what I call free face. All right. Lockdowns. There are lockdown states and free states. So it really is a question of freedom versus government tyranny. And it's the same old argument, whether it's gun control, you know, and I did a show Friday, and I was talking about why rights are absolute. So if you want to get a detailed discussion of that, go back to Friday's show, and especially the first 20 minutes, you know, when I really get into, you know, the argument. And all rights have to be absolute within the context of the right, though. So in other words, you know, the Second Amendment is absolute in terms of owning and carrying, but not using. Right? Free speech is the same way. You have an absolute right to free speech, you know, and I define speech as ideas, opinions, evidence, and arguments. You know, just yelling stuff doesn't make a difference. But when they say, you know, the old yelling in a crowded theater argument, well, you know, you have an absolute right to free speech, but using it might cause problems. And so in ways that you use it, if you use it in terms of libel and slander, you're going to have problems. Okay. Now, does that limit your right to speak freely and express your ideas, opinions, evidence, and arguments? No. But if you start insulting other people and lying about them, that's a different story, because now you're affecting somebody else's rights. Okay. In the same way, the Second Amendment, you know, if someone doesn't, you know, I remember this judge in California was saying that, you know, you don't have the right to openly carry firearms because, you know, these people have a right to feel safe. No, they don't. You know, because then you're saying that feelings are more important than rights. And if someone feels, that's like saying, oh, I feel threatened by you. I feel triggered. I think you've done something, you know, and then you can't say what you want to say because someone else feels triggered or threatened. I mean, this is the basis of leftist tyranny, is the idea that someone's feelings are more important than your rights. No, they're not. So in other words, nobody, in fact, the exercise of somebody else's rights can't, you know, impinge or infringe on your rights. Okay, so you have an absolute right to own and carry firearms, but you don't have, but when it comes to using them, that comes under government regulation, you know. So the same thing with speech. Well, it's a different one in speech, but you're responsible for your speech. Okay, so you can still say whatever you want. The government cannot make a law against free speech, but if you say things that, you know, they can make a law against inciting a riot. You know, in other words, if what you say immediately causes people, you know, you're demanding, you know, instant response, and there's this whole idea of insurrections, which of course Trump wasn't. So it gets complicated, and the best idea is for the government to stay out of making laws against free speech, and stop having the thought police and the politically correct stuff and the cancel culture and the big tech and all that kind of stuff. So you have to open those up, all right? So, but again, you are still responsible for what you say, and if what you say commits a crime, well, that's not going to be protected. If you're going to call child pornography free speech, no, you're going to jail, and you should, you know. So look at this reasonably. You know, I love the argument. Well, if anybody can, you know, have any gun they want, can they walk around with a, you know, can they own atomic weapons? Oh, really? Well, of course, my response would be, well, are you going to put a nuclear bomb? Are you going to carry that openly or concealed? You know, and where exactly are you going to carry your nuclear bomb? See, it's a stupid argument. You know, it's like saying, well, how about if I want to carry a bazooka and anti-tank weapons? Really? Okay. Well, again, openly or concealed. And where exactly are you going to get one? You know, you don't just walk down to the shop and buy a bazooka, you know, or you don't just walk down to your local gun shop and buy a nuclear weapon, you know. So this is where these arguments get really stupid. But you still have an absolute right to own and carry. But if you're going to start using, there are legal uses and illegal uses, okay? Free speech. I mean, they're not exactly the same argument, but, you know, there are still libel and slander laws, and there's still, you know, inciting riot laws and things like that. In other words, if you're exercising your right of free speech, if it offends somebody, that doesn't matter. People can be as offended as they want. In fact, the best speech is where people are offended. But if it affects their rights, okay, see, offending somebody doesn't affect their rights. That affects their feelings, and that's where the difference is, okay? So your rights are far superior. I mean, your rights are constitutionally guaranteed. Somebody else's feelings are not. And for the simple reason, the government can either, you know, protect or destroy your feelings. You can feel whatever you want. No power on heaven. Well, God, maybe, yeah. But no power on earth can change your feelings if you don't want to feel a certain way. It just can't, all right? So, but that doesn't give you the right to impinge on anybody else's rights, okay? So that's how it works. So if you're offended, I don't care. Free speech trumps being offended, okay? If you see somebody openly carrying a gun and you feel, you know, you don't feel safe, that's your problem, okay? Because your feelings cannot take away their right to openly carry a gun. Of course, you can openly carry a gun too. And if you don't want to, that's your choice. But you can't make choices for other people. And this is what we seem to be getting away from. This is the whole point of individual rights. Individual rights have to be expressed individually and exercised individually. That's why there's no such thing as a collective right. There's no such thing as a right that is limited, because who's limiting it, all right? Well, the only power that would limit your rights is the government, right? And the Constitution expressly prohibits the limiting of rights. That's called infringing, all right? So anything that infringes on your right, when the Constitution says Congress shall make no law, you know, that's pretty blatant, okay? Congress shall make no law. That's it. It doesn't say Congress shall make no law, well, unless it's, you know, good faith effort. No, there's none of that nonsense in there, all right? So rights are absolute within the context of the right. Now, if the government comes along, like Joe Biden, you know, the dictator in chief, the thief in chief, the insurrectionist, the current, imposter occupying the White House, you know, if he comes out and says that the Second Amendment can be limited because all rights are limited, well, that's a bunch of BS. No. Well, first of all, who's going to limit the right? He is. Okay. Who's going to limit your Second Amendment rights? Government, which is specifically prohibited from doing so by the Second Amendment. All right. So if the government ever limits a right, even by the slightest infinitesimal amount, that right then becomes a privilege awarded to you by government. Because if government can tell you how much of the right you have instead of it being absolute, okay. And remember the difference between using and having and, you know, exercising. Okay. So we talked about that, but if government in any way, you know, pre your exercising your right, limits your right, then that right's no longer a right. It's a privilege. Okay. See, that's the difference. So when any leftist comes along and says, well, we can have an assault weapon ban and that doesn't affect the Second Amendment. Of course it affects the Second Amendment. It's because you've touched the right of people to own and carry whatever gun they damn well please. You can't do that. That turns the Second Amendment into a privilege. Here's where it gets even worse, okay? It gets even worse because the government has no restrictions on the guns that they can buy or the amount of ammunition they can stockpile or the amount of officers that can carry, you know, weapons. Nobody's restricting them. See, the government never restricts itself from the Second Amendment. So what we actually have with the Second Amendment, and there might be other rights. I haven't really analyzed them yet, but the Second Amendment has actually been reversed, where the government can carry any gun that they want, any time they want, any amount of firepower that they want, and we can't say anything about it. Well, we will. I'm going to be writing government disarmament acts here as things go on, especially with the Biden administration. Are you kidding? Excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry. I goofed. Biden insurrection. And the simple reason is because, first of all, he's not a legitimate president. He has no legal authority to do what he's doing. And the problem is the Republicans aren't standing up to say so. They're not standing up to, you know, bills that are not reconciliation bills, even though they're allowing the Democrats to say they're reconciliation bills. And, you know, they say they're not going to vote to cancel the filibuster, but they've effectively canceled the filibuster. By classifying bills incorrectly as reconciliation bills, they've canceled the filibuster. See how this works? It's all Orwellian newspeak. It's doublespeak. It's meaningless. Okay. And if the Republicans, here's another one too. If the Republicans take power, I'm on a roll this morning. I must've got sleep or something. Anyway, if the Republicans take power or, you know, get the House or the Senate back, who's going to be the Speaker of the House for the Republicans? You're going to bring back, who is that? You can bring Paul Ryan. You're going to put some other deep state operative in there to make sure the Republicans don't actually do anything. So that's something you have to think about too. And this is the question I'd be asking. Dear GOP, since you let the Biden insurrection take over the White House, since you refuse to stop bills that are not reconciliation bills with a filibuster that you're fully entitled to use, since you're not doing anything to boost all the election correction efforts, especially in Arizona, why the hell should we trust you with the House? Why the hell should we trust you with the Senate? You don't do anything. You don't do anything at all. And who's to say you're not going to have another Paul Ryan as Speaker that stops everything you're going to do? Stops the witnesses, stops the hearings, stops the bills, stops the interesting stuff, stops the stuff that we are counting on you to do, which you won't do, because you're going to elect a deep state operative Speaker, and everything that's going to happen over the next 2 years is going to be a total waste. Because you're, well, year and a half, because you're not going to do anything, even if you get the House. You're going to elect a lousy Speaker, nothing's going to happen, and we're going to be right back where we started from. That's where Action Radio comes in. You know, by then, I hope to have my, you know, 5 million listeners in the next, you know, 2 years, and then we can start to do something. You want to see an effect on public opinion? Oh, yeah. Wait till this show gets as big as it's going to get. All right. So what does this have to do with vaccines? Well, everything. All right, because you figure that one of the things the government cannot do is unreasonable seizures. All right, the government has to go through due process. You know, and here's a due process for you. All right, how many times or where? Name one place. In fact, I I'm going to see if I can get a little investigative report done that internally here at Action Radio to start checking on vaccination places. How many vaccination places are asking are testing for immunity to COVID before you get the vaccination? Okay, think about that. You know, if this isn't just pure sales, the first thing they want to do, you know, what's the first law of medicine? Do no harm. Don't give something that doesn't need giving. Okay, like rule number one, Hippocratic Oath. Okay, so the number one thing is for doctors to not do things they're not supposed to do, or don't do things that are unnecessary. Don't just kind of like, you know, the covering your butt medicine. Well, we better test for this. We better test for this. It's like when I got blood thinners, you know, after my heart surgery, nearly killed me, and my lungs inflated and I almost suffocated to death. That's a true story. I'll tell you the details. Maybe I'll bring that up in the second hour. You know, when we talk about we're gonna have a fascinating second hour. We've got Ann Ziegenhorn's coming back with some friends of hers, and we're gonna talk about the dangers of breast implants. This is something that never would have occurred to me to talk about, and this is why I say I have the greatest friends in the world. And so people come to me, you know, with topics, and this is something that it's not necessarily an Action Radio thing to write citizen legislation on, because Arizona's already done it. So this is the case where model legislation, good legislation, has already been written. So we don't have to. It's already been done, which is great. Okay. So I'm all for advancing, you know, other people's good ideas. And if someone else has already, you know, gotten a good idea out there, let's get behind it. I mean, that's how things work. I expect other people to get behind our good ideas. I'm certainly going to get behind other people's good ideas. All right. So back to segregation. So how many people, how many places, how many doctors, and name anybody. In fact, I'd love to have someone call the show and say, oh, yeah, my doctor asked, tested me for COVID immunity, you know, before the vaccine. Well, first of all, I hope you don't get any of these messenger RNA, genetic modification, population reducing, you know, shots in your arm. Okay, that's what they're for. All right. There was an animal experiment. I'll have to go back and find the details. But they talked about how animals received the messenger RNA, genetic modification, population reducing shot, you know, courtesy of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which brags about wanting to reduce the population and thinking that vaccinations are a great way to do it. And you're going to take medicine from these people? Are you nuts? I mean, I don't mean to laugh at that. It's so tragic. You know, tragedy and comedy, you know, are flip sides of the same coin, just like crisis and opportunity. Okay. So I'm not sure which is worse, the tragedy or the comedy, that people are taking vaccinations, you know, funded by the very folks that want to reduce the population by half, and this is supposed to be a health measure. Okay? I mean, I'm running out of knives to cut through the irony. I mean, this is scary the way this is going, all right? So anyway, so where is all this leading? This is leading to the fact that people are being segregated, the new segregation. Well, first of all, the Democrat Party is, you know, they used to be the party of segregation. I get news to you. They still are. Okay, so there's a war on white people. They're segregating against white people. Eric Bolling was on BBC with Aisha somebody who's like the ultimate black supremacist of the week. All right, you know, talking about she hates white people. White people can't care about black people. Yada yada yada. So the Democrat Party is segregating, but they're doing it differently now. They're still segregating black people from white people. They're just doing it by this time accusing white people of being horrible, disgusting, racist, yada yada. Okay, so it's like they flipped. The Democrats, you know, put down, persecuted, you know, made unequal laws, segregated and destroyed, you know, black Americans. And now they're trying to do the same thing to white Americans, but the point is still the same, to segregate. Okay. So it's almost like it doesn't really matter, you know, who's being segregated as long as somebody is. So now you have victims and, you know, oppressors. And if you switch the victims and oppressors, you still have victims and oppressors, which is the main goal. It's like the ultimate goal of war is not to win it, but it's to stay in war. That's what the government does, so they can spend money and make money and borrow money and make their contractors rich, you know, the bankers rich who lend money to government to go to war. We know how this works, okay? It's a pretty simple formula. All right, so what this is all leading to is an article I found right before I saw a news story in One American News, and it was talking about how in St. Vincent had a volcano on Friday. And that's, you know, that happens. It's been going on for, you know, millions of years with, you know, volcanoes, right? But the question is, you know, the people that were evacuated, you know, the only people evacuated were those who were vaccinated. So in other words, you know, you heard the Marxist terrorist group Black Lives Matter. Well, here's one for you: vaccinated lives matter, unvaccinated lives don't matter. I mean, that's what they're saying. I found this in RT Question More is the website. There's a bunch of them that did this. Jerusalem Post, I think, looked at this. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think the Jerusalem Post did too. I'm speaking too fast. I get too excited. Jerusalem Post. Yeah, there we go. Their article was shorter. This one's bigger. That's why I went with it. So this is 10th of April, and it's called Only the Vaccinated Will Be Saved. You know, confusion after St. Vincent Prime Minister says only those with COVID jab can flee volcano on cruise ships. Okay, here's the cruise ship thing again. All right. Now, we know that 99.97% of the people will recover from COVID if they get it. Some will have no symptoms. Some will have some symptoms. Some will have mild, and some will have moderate, and some, you might feel pretty sick for a couple of weeks. Okay. That's 99.97% of the population. The 0.03% of the population that's really vulnerable is really vulnerable, and they need protecting. But why would you give a vaccination to a population where over 99% of the people, you know, are at worst going to get moderately sick? And you might, and the folks that are moderately sick might want to get a vaccine, not this one that they're issuing now, you know, not the messenger RNA, but I mean a real vaccine that actually has genetic material from COVID, so your body can, you know, learn how to fight it. All right, and even then, I question the whole idea of that, because vaccinations, if you read or listen to Robert Francis Kennedy's announcement, he has a little YouTube on children's health defense, and it's fascinating talking about the lowering of IQ across the world, you know, over the last 20 or 30 years. Since, you know, as vaccinations go up, world IQ goes down. That can't be a coincidence, all right? The persecution of folks, the disease, the chronic one, we'll skip persecution for later. We'll talk about that in a second in this article. But the vast increase in childhood diseases, chronic diseases, and you know, education, you know, challenges, ADHD, autism, things like that. You know, the more vaccines, the worse all these things seem to get. Coincidence? I don't think so. Okay. So let's talk about this. So in other words, if the choice is between saving someone who has a COVID vaccine that they probably don't need and might, you know, affect them adversely in the future in a really bad way, over somebody that hasn't had a vaccine, has normal immunity, normal health, and is probably immune to COVID, you know, so they're discriminating against people potentially immune to COVID in favor of people that have been given a dangerous, I think, messenger RNA, you know, FDA unapproved, you know, experimental gene shot. Once again, how do you get through the irony of this? There's just too much of it. All right, let me get to the article. So it says, as a volcanic eruption cast a pall of ash, I'm not sure what a pall of ash is. How much is a pall? It's got to be a lot of ash. P-A-L-L. You guys help me out here. Over the Caribbean island of St. Vincent, I guess it's in the Grenadines area. Anyway, tens of thousands fled, but eyebrows were raised after the island nation's PM, that would be prime minister, said they weren't going anywhere without a COVID shot. Well, who made this guy dictator and decider of life and death? Who made this guy God of St. Vincent? All right. See, this is a problem with politicians. They think they can lock down their economies. They can't, because we have a right to commerce. We have a right to life. Life is, you know, and I talked about this the other day. You know, if you're making, the reason they call it making a living is because you work for your life, you know, so you can buy food and shelter and the things that keep your life going. All right. That's what making a living is. So you can keep on living. Therefore, your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness includes, you know, making a living. All right. That's your life. And the government has no right to seize that. So we need to start thinking about punishing and jailing the governors and mayors who locked down our country. And we'll talk about Dr. Fascist later with all his mask stuff. Oh, by the way, the CDC has no power to regulate. Keep that in mind when you're following a guideline you don't have to follow. Okay. So who is this? Who is this? This dictatorial jerk who said that people who don't have, you know, this vaccine, which I bet he doesn't know anything about, you know, can't get their lives saved. Really? Think about that. Right? What's that? The old lifeboat game? You know, and the question is, well, you've got seven people on a lifeboat. Remember you playing this back when you were a kid? It's an ethics challenge. You got seven people on a lifeboat, but you only have enough food for five. You know, which two people do you get rid of? Okay. And you have a priest, you have a doctor, you have who knows what else you have on there. Okay. And kids decide very rationally, very logically, which two people are going to cast, you know, over the side. The reality is that's not the test. The test is you don't cast anybody over the side. You take your chances with all seven people. Okay. That's the ethical thing to do. You know, same question, but you know, you get this one as a kid too. Moral dilemma. You know, I used to give my kid moral dilemmas all the time. Well, if your family's, you know, starving and they need medicine for a disease, you know, is it okay to break into a pharmacy? No, it's not okay. But we're saving lives if we break into the pharmacy. No, you can still get the drugs, you know, legal ways. Okay. Aid, government, funding, charity, you know, any number of other ways you can do it. Okay. So the answer is, what's the ethical thing to do? All right. The ethical thing, if St. Vincent were a lifeboat You know, do you throw out the people that haven't got the vaccine and you save the people that did, even though the people that did are probably a lot sicker than the people that didn't? Okay, think about that for a second. More irony, you know. So, but the thing is, you know, this guy's playing that same, he's playing the lifeboat game, right? He's playing the lifeboat game that we played as kids. Okay, you know, and say, what's the value judgment? Who are you going to throw overboard? All right. Well, he's going to throw overboard. You know, he's not going to throw. He's going to let you know die on this island potentially under a volcano. People that he thinks don't deserve to live, and the people he thinks don't deserve to live are those that didn't have his government's COVID shot. Think about that. What if that happened here? Imagine the United States. Okay, so we got another hurricane coming to, you know, God forbid, to the Gulf Coast, or we've got another, you know, Sandy storm or whatever that one was, or another, you know, nor'easter or some massive blizzard somewhere. And the government says, well, you know, we're going to evacuate the people that have the COVID vaccine. The rest of you are on your own. That may happen. Okay. This is what they call a precedent. Okay. So I want you to think about that as your government is taking more and more of your rights away. And if you don't start shouting, I mean, I'm shouting, I'm doing the best I can, but if you want to make this voice bigger, then share the show. I'm serious. Please share the show. You know, our voice will be bigger and more people will understand that St. Vincent is playing the lifeboat game. And what if your mayor does that? Okay. What if your governor does that? What if the illegal occupant in the White House starts saying that we're going to save the people who've had a vaccination and we're not going to save the others from, massive EMP attack, you know, or things that Dr. Pry talks about. Okay. So what if we have lifeboat, you know, non-ethics, you know, for this nation, simply on the basis of who had a messenger RNA unapproved FDA shot that was dangerous. Okay. Josie's on the line. We'll get her before we get to Dr. Pry. We got about 3 minutes. And, you know, let's get her line live here. So what do you think of my lifeboat ethics here? Is that a good analogy?
You're going 100 miles an hour.
I'm on a roll. I wish you could put the show on like slow down. Is there a way to do that on the internet?
I know.
Like, slow the rate of speech. Just listen to it a bunch of times. It'll sound better each time.
No, but you're good. You're good.
Well, thank you.
Yes. This is this whole thing reminds me of what Fidel Castro did in Cuba in the 80s with the Maria boat. Instead of murdering all those people, hundreds of people that he put in these boats, he sent them to Miami because they were useless to him. Most of them were infected with AIDS. They were little babies and all old people that were useless. So he shipped them to Miami. And this is what the criminal Democrats and a lot of these people from other countries are getting the same idea from Fauci to get rid of people.
We're not getting doctors and lawyers crossing our border illegally. We're not getting physicists and engineers. We're not getting, you know, nurses and teachers, and we're not getting all, you know, we're not. Who are we getting?
No. Nope.
He asked rhetorically.
And see, this is odd. This is this is crazy because, you know, Biden wants all these illegals coming in with COVID. And they're placing them in all the hotels. They're spending $86 million of our tax dollars to care for them.
Right.
And to help with the homeless in the streets. Mm-hmm. And they want to murder us with the vaccine. So
COVID is a tool. COVID ceased being an infection a long time. It's not even a disease. It's an infection because viruses are infections. You know, other cancer is a disease. Yeah. Okay. So it's a viral infection that invades your body. Okay. So your body has natural defenses against it until you reach a point in your life where you don't have defenses against it. And that's at the end of your life. Okay. So the human body is amazingly resilient to this stuff. All right. So, and this is why I asked the question earlier. Is there any place in the country where they are actually testing to see if you're immune to COVID before giving you a vaccine?
No.
Because if they were and they still gave the vaccine, that would be malpractice. They could be sued for that.
Yeah.
You're giving a vaccine to somebody who's already immune. Yeah. So they don't want to know.
No. I heard in a video yesterday that they have removed Johnson & Johnson because this young girl, 24-year-old, within minutes after, I think it was hours, excuse me, not minutes, within hours after getting the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, she started having seizures. And I think she's still in the hospital right now, and it's a mess. So I think
what the hell is a 24-year-old? Yeah, what the hell is a 24-year-old getting a vaccine for anyway? I mean, that's insane.
I know. It's stupid.
I mean,
stupid. Yeah.
You know, and here's the thing, too.
People
if you're older,
people are blinded by Satan. And, you know, I put that comment on one of those club, hub, whatever you call that thing. And one guy replied to me. She said, "You are racist." I'm like, what does that have to do with our team being racist? People are losing their minds. Literally.
No, it's interesting you should say that. That's I've got articles on this. I haven't decided exactly how I'm going to use them yet. But there are a lot of folks who are saying that there's racism. There's too many white people getting vaccinated. We're not vaccinating enough black
like
and brown people.
They were accusing Ron DeSantis to be connected with public because more white people shop at white public than blacks. And blacks were not going to get the vaccine. Only white
folks.
And
does Publix have a sign out front,
yeah,
you know, white people encouraged to shop here?
No.
I mean,
not.
But that's what they're saying. See, I use the absurd examples to point out absurdity. So this is a new segregation, okay? So what they're saying is, actually, there's a war on white people. There really is. And it's getting worse.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have the segregation. That's vaccination is segregation. It's deciding who lives and who dies in St. Vincent based on whether you got a messenger RNA genetic modification shot by people that want to cut the world population in half. That to me makes no sense.
That is that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So check the article out. It's on my Parler page, at Greg Penglis. You know, all the stuff I can't post on Facebook right now, although I do have friends posting. So feel free to, you know, if you got a decent article, don't get me in more trouble. You know, email it to me, and then I'll put it on Parler. But that's what's going on. Looks like I've got Dr. Pryor on the line now too. So we're gonna move on. I'm just dying to ask him about what happened in Iran. You know, with I think it looks like Israel shut down the power at a nuclear plant.
I'll talk to you later, okay?
Well, thank you. Yeah, we got more to talk about too, because I want to get in. You know, the vaccine segregation is going to be a big topic, I think, for us. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Josie.
God bless. Bye.
I'll bless you too. All right. And you can call back later in the second hour too. We're going to have, this is going to be a very interesting show. Speaking of Joe Biden, let me just play this real quick.
Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
And I'll be right back with Dr. Peter Pry.
What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry.
And in the interest of time, sir, I'm just going to let you go. Feel free to present your topic because at the top of the hour, we're going to be switching to some very special guests joining us. Good morning, sir.
Okay. Who is the special guest that's going to be joining you?
Ann Ziegenhorn and friends, she's a woman who almost died of breast implants. And I didn't know anything about this topic, but apparently there's some disclosure laws. One is in Arizona, and she wants to bring it to Florida where she lives. And so we have several victims of this. And like I said, this is a topic I know nothing about. But they wanted to come on board and let us know what's happening. So that's where we're going to go. So we cover it all here.
Sure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting topic. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll just – there are a number of very important national security issues. I know you usually like me to just focus on one. But I'm going to use my time to just sort of kick off a number of things that are happening in the world. Because
okay,
I don't think it gives the full picture to just focus on one issue today. First, the defense budget. You know, Biden administration has submitted its defense budget and the and it hasn't made anybody happy. Not the Hawks or the Doves. It's a flat defense budget, which some conservatives anyway should interpret as a good sign, because the left wanted deep cuts in defense spending, but that didn't happen. On the other hand, Hawks and conservatives have been calling for a significant increase in defense spending because it's a more dangerous world. What does that signify? We'll see going forward. You know, is it possible that the Biden administration isn't going to be as radical and leftist as we feared? That remains to be seen. Certainly, at least when it comes to defense, obviously out of the gate, they've been the most radical administration we've ever seen when it comes to social policy and opposed economic policy. Next topic, war game against China. The Trump administration, conducted a number of exercises. Had two exercises in a row, one in the last 2 years of the Trump administration, and we lost each time in a simulated war against China over Taiwan. And the Biden administration, right out the gate in its war game in defending Taiwan against China, has won. But it has won, it has come out because they postulated that the U.S. military is equipped with technologies that are 30 years in the future.
That was
many
interesting.
Right, including masses of armed drones and other high-tech weaponry, many of which aren't even in the Biden defense budget for purchasing. So that's a little insight into maybe the way the future is going to look, which is kind of 1984-ish, you know, to basically have a war game that we win with forces that we don't have.
Well, that's government by fantasy and government by wishful thinking, which is what I think has governed the left for a long time. They don't care about the facts. They just, if they believe it should happen, then it should happen, and then it does happen, and that's the reality. To think they're fantasy and make them realities. I think that's how they see the world.
Exactly. And speaking of fantasies, there's now a U.S. intelligence report out that is predicting that Russia will be a declining but disruptive power. in the right, which is all good for us, right? That they're because of their population and is declining, and they postulate a future where Putin is no longer running Russia, so we have to wait for Putin to die, so that his competent leadership, you know, is no longer facing us. But
he just extended his term for like two terms, to what, 2036 or something like that? He just extended time when he can run.
That's right. And they've been engaged in this massive nuclear buildup and this modernization of their general purpose forces. Obviously a very optimistic view of the future. Oh, we won't have to worry about Russia because their power will decline in the future, and they'll merely be a disruptive adversary, which just doesn't seem consistent with the facts on the ground. I mean, they've put that intelligence assessment out there, even as we face, which is sort of the next headline, you know, a situation where Russia has massed 85,000 troops on the border with Ukraine in an alleged exercise, one of these snap exercises. They've demonstrated the ability to mobilize very quickly, 85,000 troops, which is easily enough to overrun Ukraine if they wanted to do it. And part of it is a robot army that Russia has deployed, and we don't have anything like this, which comprises unmanned ground fighting vehicles like tanks that are completely automated as part of this army. They didn't mention, I'm sure Russia has them, armed drones too, massive armed drones. You know, it was just demonstrated in the Nagorno-Karabakh war. I think we talked about that earlier.
Yes, we did.
About how armed drones can be a decisive weapon in a future conflict against a traditional type of an army that relies on manned tanks and manned fighting vehicles and even manned air forces. So, we've got a situation here that's very touch and go. And in fact, some people are there is a lot of concern that maybe this time this isn't just an exercise. Maybe maybe Russia will actually invade and take over. And one analyst, I was pleased to see that somebody finally said, gee, is it possible that Russia and China will coordinate their aggression, and that if Russia does invade Ukraine, China will attack Taiwan at the same time? What do we do then if that happens? You know, we have talked often on this show how there is an alliance, a strategic partnership between not just Russia and China, but also involving North Korea and Iran that Washington just doesn't seem to want to face up to, and that these powers the great powers, Russia and China, and lesser powers, Iran and North Korea, are very likely to coordinate their aggressions, you know, because we've reduced our military forces to the point where we can't even win a one theater war against China at this point, you know. So what's holding them back, you know, except probably the nuclear deterrence and the fact that they seem to be winning without war everywhere. Okay.
Can I just hold you for a second on that? Because this is a really important point. It seems like they're sort of lining up together, and they sort of divided the world into their spheres of influence. China has this section, Russia has this section, North Korea is here, Iran's over there, and I don't know exactly where the borders are. But do they see themselves as the future, you know, power brokers of the world, that we will divide the world up into our spheres of influence, and the old world, the United States, Europe, you know, really doesn't have much effect anymore, and we can kind of do what we want, and especially when the United States is as weak as it is with what I consider an illegal, you know, administration in office that has no justification, doesn't have the support of half the country, at least, if not more, you know, this seems to be the perfect time for them to do those old spheres of influence, like when the world divided up in World War II between the Axis and the Allied powers. Do you see that happening?
Oh yes, I think that's their plan, you know, that they've basically hammered out among themselves, all four of them, you know, Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran, what their respective roles will be in a future world order. You know, it goes beyond the spheres of influence, but they have a conception of a new world order which is dominated by themselves, and you know, the regional interests of Iran and North Korea will be implemented, you know, by the new superpowers, you know, represented by Russia and China, but they will dominate, you know, the world militarily and economically, and the United States will be and the Western allies will basically, you know, be put into subordinate positions, you know, where we have to basically do what we're told or face destruction. And even this, they probably see themselves as winning without war, precisely because of what you have mentioned, the existence in the United States of an illegal administration. You know, I've mentioned before, I think on your show, that if you look at Thucydides' Peloponnesian Wars, the first regarded as one of the first wars between a free system, which was Athens, and a military dictatorship, which was Sparta, you know, the Peloponnesian War did not end with the destruction of Athens, as was normally the case in classical warfare. Normally, when a city-state lost, it would be it and its allies. Athens was the head of the free democratic societies that were the Delian League. And what would happen is that those cities would be destroyed, their population sold into slavery, you know. But that didn't happen because the Athenians and the Delian League were willing to become tyrannies, and democracy was eliminated. It was the freedom that was regarded as a threat by Sparta and its Lacedaemonian League. And so they might see themselves coming back to today, the block of unfree states, Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran, looking at what has happened in the United States. And China has actually said it out loud, you know, that their system is superior and they are the wave of the future. And, you know, they actually believe in tyranny. And they see tyranny happening here. You know, if we lose our freedom, we won't be the kind of threat to them that we have been in the past. And that's part of changing and becoming a new world order, too. A new world order where the United States no longer exists as a champion of freedom.
Yeah. And we have our own globalists. Yeah, we have our own globalists that are trying to get us to that position too, to reduce us in the world.
We have given up. We have given up on the concept of free elections. You know, we have an illegitimate government in charge of this country. That's it has consequences that are not just domestic. We so often think of our the world affairs and the domestic affairs as being completely separate, but they're actually linked. And the bad guys are going to be thinking about, well, what can we do in our foreign policy, you know, to actually support the transition of the United States into an unfree system. Biden administration may find itself getting unexpected help, you know, from the bad guys, you know, even
well,
if
aren't they already
or isn't aware of it, you know.
Are there connections already? But I mean, I know the connections, you know, financially, but I mean, how much is China, you know, telling the Biden globalist crowd, not him, but whoever's behind him, what to do? You know, how much are they saying, we are the future, you know, you guys need to sort of, you know, knuckle under, otherwise we're going to destroy you. So let's do a little blackmail here and, you know, just remove enough freedom to, so you're not a threat to us anymore and our people, because we don't want to have them have the idea of freedom. See, it's not that freedom is such a threat from us, it's the freedom, our ideas are such a threat if their country's people get the idea of freedom. Isn't that more how it works?
Well, that's part of how it works. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
But the fact that the idea that Biden, if he's their Manchurian candidate, isn't under their control, well, that's even better. And who knows? Yeah. Maybe that accounts for why Russia and China, Americans often ask, well, why haven't they struck yet? You know, they've arrived at this position, even during the Trump administration, you know, where they could win, you know, but they haven't struck yet. And maybe that's because, you know, what we are not seeing, what's happening behind the scenes, is the undermining of our own system, you know, helped by massively by China, Russia doing what it can, all the bad guys doing what it can to make us an unfree system. And they see themselves, because as we've also talked about on this show in the past, from the perspective of these totalitarian powers, there is no such thing as a peace with us. They've been at war with us all through this period. We don't see it that way. We think we're in peace, you know, because we have a different strategic culture, you know, rooted in Judeo-Christian principles and even earlier principles that go back to the Roman Empire, where you have to declare war, for example, which was true, you know, even from the founding of Rome, you know, that there would be a condition of war only if it was declared, and otherwise you were at peace. And that's how that paradigm is something that we continue to think of. And it's a potential fatal weakness for free systems, especially systems that have our strategic culture, you know, because we have never really grasped that we're really at war with these guys all the time, or at least they're at war with us all the time. And so perhaps they're staying their hand and maybe the reason they haven't moved yet, you know, is because they see themselves as winning without war. Going on to the topic you had mentioned before, you know, Israel, you know, appears to have confirmed that it conducted what I call a blackout war against Iran by blacking out the electric grid and that manages the powers that Natanz underground nuclear facility, you know, which is where Iran has its most advanced uranium centrifuges and has increased uranium enrichment, publicly said, up to 20%. The world press mistakenly, well, they get it right that when you go from 3% to 20%, that's an enormous step forward toward achieving weapons-grade uranium. But in the world press, they're always reporting weapons-grade uranium as at the 90% level, you know. But in fact, I and a number of my colleagues published an article in National Review last month that pointed out that you can actually make a bomb with uranium or plutonium that's enriched to 50%. You know, it's a less efficient bomb, but it can have the yield of a Hiroshima or Nagasaki bomb. So, you know, the 20% enrichment that they say they're doing is almost halfway to the enrichment level that you need. Not that it matters that much, because to go from 20% to 90% can be done very quickly and end up producing weapons-grade plutonium. And besides which, I think the main theme of that article that we published last month was that we think Iran already has the bomb, which makes it all the more dangerous, you know, to be playing games with Iran, acts of aggression against Iran, because it's not as if they're not a nuclear weapons state. It actually changes the whole calculus of risk when you're dealing with a nuclear weapons state. But I believe, and my colleagues believe, that Iran is not overtly a nuclear weapons state because they may well plan to use the bomb, but they're looking for signs and portents. They're looking for a geostrategic situation where they will consider it optimal to employ those weapons. And maybe that's why Iran has not replied militarily, for example, to attacks on the Natanz reactor and these other parts of its nuclear infrastructure that are part of the civilian nuclear power program. You know, that's one of the great failings of the Obama administration, by trusting the IAEA, the UN International Atomic Energy Agency, and our own stupid intelligence community that assumes that the Iranian bomb program would only be limited to this civilian nuclear power program and where we know the facilities are, and not in these underground military facilities, you know, that are vast, many of them. In fact, I think a couple of weeks ago I described one of these facilities, you know, there's this vast underground facility that we know of that's heavily guarded with surface-to-air missiles and even medium-range ballistic missiles. What are medium-range ballistic missiles doing? This is their longest-range missile sitting outside of this facility. You know, is it possible that that's where nuclear weapons are being kept so that you can upload them onto these missiles? Or maybe some of those missiles are already armed. And there are these huge electrical power lines, you know, delivering hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of volts underground for some purpose. And really, there's only one purpose that could probably be served by such vast amounts of electrical energy going underground, and that's to run these uranium centrifuges, because they use enormous amounts of electricity. But anyway, this is kind of another feather in my cap, because this is yet another example on this Monday morning of a blackout war, you know, where Israel has waged a limited blackout war by taking out the electric grid for Natanz as in a desperate effort to stop down. Well, they did a cyber attack. Now, we don't know. I'm going to be very interested to see what the details are, which may come out, you know, in the coming days and weeks. If it was a symbolic gesture, they probably, you know, went into the SCADAs and control systems and locked them up, you know, which is sort of what Russia does every Christmas to Ukraine, just to demonstrate that they can get into their power grid and they can monkey with their power grid. But that's not a permanent blackout, you know, because within a day, 24 hours, you can unlock that. So it'll be interesting to see if Iran comes back quickly from it. If it was a serious kind of an attack, they would have manipulated the SCADAs to cause an overvoltage that would burn out the transformers, okay? That is something that eventually it can be repaired, because they didn't attack the whole country, just the Natanz electric grid. But it'll take a long time to fix, because it takes a long time to replace the transformers. You know, they probably can't be repaired. It's very difficult to repair a transformer once it's been burnt out, because the damage can be done to the coil, you know, there might be one wire deep in the heart of the transformer that's been shorted out. So you'd have to unravel all that miles and miles of wire and find the short and all of that. So really, you know, when you've done that and you've taken out a transformer, the transformer is junk and it's got to be replaced. And Iran probably doesn't make its own transformers. if it's a low, if it's a low voltage transformer, they probably make that and they could replace that. But it's probably, if the Israelis did it right, they've taken out a high voltage transformer, and that'll take months for the weeks or months for the Iranians to fix, unless they get help from the Russians or Chinese, who will fly, you know, fly a transformer in or send a freighter with a transformer in for them and
train
help
load
them, and help
yeah,
and help
yeah.
them do it. But the other interesting thing about this is that, you know, it was all over. The Israelis aren't really keeping it secret. It was all over the Sunday news shows. The Mossad did this on Israeli news, and they basically they've been celebrating this while Lloyd Austin, our Secretary of Defense, is in Israel on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's sending a signal to us and to the bomb administration that Netanyahu is, you know, serious, that he's not going to just sit still for this Iran nuclear deal, you know, that it is unacceptable, you know, for Iran to be a nuclear weapon state. And and at the same time, Austin, maybe despite or maybe because of this action, announced that, you know, that that it, America is going to be the unshakable friend of Israel. All right. You know, but I'm sure that behind the scenes, the Obama administration is furious, you know, with Israel for doing this, because they've been trying to make nice with Iran to get back to the nuclear deal with Iran.
Yeah.
And,
you said the Obama administration. I'm just kind of curious. It's funny. You're
excuse
right.
Excuse me, the Biden administration.
No,
right,
I think you're right. The
Obama
first time,
administration
yeah.
people. They're the same
yeah.
people that
yeah.
that you know that that did it. And also on the news, and we've only got, like, by my clock, about 4 minutes left.
Yeah.
It looks like North Korea is just about ready to roll out its new ballistic missile submarine. Most people would say that this gives them their first ballistic missile submarine. But, in fact, they've actually had a ballistic missile submarine called the Sinpo-1 that can fire, you know, one ballistic missile. This one, I think, is able to fire three ballistic missiles. So it would increase their deployed ballistic missile submarine fleet to two boats at this point. And that's not much. And it's not really enough. It would, if they had two, it would be enough to have, you know, one at sea, you know, for protracted periods of time, but probably not enough to have a boat constantly at sea. They'd have to have a bigger fleet than that in order to sustain another one at sea. And the reason I mentioned that is because it'll pretty much take off the table the military option for disarming North Korea if they can have a ballistic missile submarine fleet where one of the boats is always at sea. And so they're starting to move in that direction. And one of the things that has always worried me about North Korea and ballistic missile submarines is, you know, years ago, 20 years ago, you know, Russia sold them about more than a dozen of their Gulf-class ballistic missile submarines. This is a diesel-powered, it's a primitive, it was like the first generation of Russian ballistic missile submarines. And still, they're really much more sophisticated than anything North Korea has been able to build by itself. But they've been out there, they've been sitting there in dry dock. Russia said it sold them to North Korea for scrap 20 years ago, and we stupidly took them at their word. But they're still there. They're in dry dock. I'm
how
concerned
about
that what the North Koreans are doing is they're figuring out how ballistic missile submarines work. And these things that they've been building on their own are sort of, in addition to being weapons, they're also experiments, so that they can, you know, figure out how to do it, and that they might launch a crash program to bring back, to take demothball the Gulf submarines, and suddenly they could have a fleet of 12 ballistic missile submarines pretty quickly, which would be enough to have like four of them at sea all the time, in which case, you know, we'd be stuck with a nuclear North Korea, you know, until forever, until Kim Jong-un wakes up one morning and decides to start a nuclear war, which is what I think is going to happen if North Korea is allowed to remain a nuclear weapons state. So that's all the bad news for this morning. There's actually more, U.S. and China are deploying, both of us are deploying aircraft carriers in the South China Sea, but we only have a minute, and I wanted you to have an opportunity to have a word in edgewise.
Oh, no, this is fascinating, and I don't mind a lot of topics. I just try to cover the topics as well as we can because I always have questions. I think next week, let me ask you in the last minute now, Ukraine, if you can give me a quick one-minute synopsis of what happened when Russia went in the last time. I'm sort of going to try and get a preview of what they might do this time. Then I have all my guests are here ready for the next hour. So just if we can sort of, or maybe if we don't have enough time, we'll just do it next week. But why does Russia want Ukraine? I mean, let's put it as simply as we can.
Well, in a nutshell, Russia wants Ukraine because they don't want Ukraine to become a NATO member state.
Okay.
And Ukraine's object is to become a member of NATO. And Russia doesn't want, and Russia's goal is not only for Ukraine not to become a NATO member state, Putin wants to reconstitute the Soviet Empire and recapture all that lost territory. You know, that's been one of his major foreign policy goals. He considered the disintegration of the USSR to be the greatest tragedy in human history. And so that's that. And it would also help with the undermining of the legitimacy of NATO, you know, which is why they continue to crucify Ukraine, because it's basically both. Don't forget both the United States and Ukraine, the United States under Bill Clinton, and the United Kingdom both guaranteed Ukraine's borders if they gave up their nuclear weapons. You know, there is an agreement to that effect, and yet it's obviously not worth the paper it's written on. And so what Russia is doing here is signaling to the NATO alliance that depends upon the United States for security that the NATO alliance itself isn't worth the paper it's written on. Because look what they are doing with the crucifixion of Ukraine. And someday they might accomplish a lot of what Russia plans by just taking over the whole thing. In effect, when they took over Crimea, you asked me what happened the last time. Nothing happened. They took over Crimea, and basically Crimea is part of Russia, probably the most important part of Ukraine from a strategic point of view because of the big naval base that's there, Sevastopol, on the Black Sea. So they've already demonstrated, and I think have convinced themselves, and I think it's true, that they can walk into Ukraine and we won't do anything about it. But
I think they're right. But I have to let you go now.
Yeah,
this has been just a great collection of, like you say, bad news, but we need to hear it because we're not going to get this from other places. So I really appreciate all this information, and we will pick it up next week. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. And, good to have you on. Yes?
Thank you, Greg. All right. Well, until next week, we'll see what happens in the world. Hopefully, we won't be in a war.
I hope not either. I got stuff to do. I got Action Radio. All right.
And I don't want us to lose one because if we get here, we'll lose.
Absolutely not. Oh, yes. On that note, we're going to totally change our topics. That's Dr. Peter Pry, who is our regular Monday guest. Just an incredible privilege to have him on the show with his knowledge and in-depth of what's going on in national security that you're not going to get other places. So Dr. Pry, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to play a little quick announcement here, and I'll be back with four guests. This is going to be interesting.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
All right. So the first line I made live, and we have four four guests this morning, and actually Ann Ziegenhorn, who's been on the show before. I got your line live, and I'm going to introduce each of your guests as well. I'm going to let you guys talk. I'm going to let you take the whole the rest of the hour, and you can come back as often as necessary to get this message out there. But tell your story, let things go as you see fit, and tell us about the legislation and pretty much everything you want to. So, Ann, welcome to the show.
Hello, good morning. How are you doing today? It sounds like an interesting topic on what was happening over on the other side of the world.
Oh, yeah, that's Dr. Peter Pry. He's on every Monday at 7:30 Central Time. And so it's just a great report. Before that, we usually have Shannon Rice, Milton City Council. Today I talked about vaccination segregation, how in St. Vincent they're only rescuing people from the volcano who've had a COVID shot. I want to talk to you a little bit about COVID and breast implants in a bit, but I want to make all your callers, your guests live. So 407 area code, I'm going to start with you, and this way I can identify who's on which line. So you're live, and if you'd introduce yourself, and like they used to say, what's my line? Enter in. Sign in, please. Good morning.
Okay, so 407. Good morning.
Hi. You're live, and you are?
I am Terry Diaz.
Hi, Terry.
Okay, very nice to meet you, Greg. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, listen, it's a privilege. Anytime I can help Ann out with anything, I'm more than happy to do so. Let's get our next person on the line. And you guys can all talk. You can make a panel discussion. You can do what you want. You're all going to be – this is the beauty of this show is I can have many callers on at the same time. 469 area code. And you are? Welcome to the show.
Good morning. This is Carrie Johnson.
Hi, Carrie.
Okay,
I'm going to turn it over to Ann in just a second once I make sure I have everybody here. And our last caller, but certainly not least, 480 area code. You are?
Hi, this is Robin Tout.
Hello, Robin.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome to Action Radio. All right. So now I've got everybody. And so, Ann, I'm going to turn it over to you. Tell us what we need to know. Tell the whole story.
Well, you and I have spoken about this before, and you have this wonderful program where you help regular people be able to write bills and have it posted so that other people can see and pick up on. And for about 3 years, I've been trying to work with getting our Florida rep, as well as Terry. She was the first one that came on after me. She is also in Florida. So we're the Florida – we're not, and no means we're not the only. We have hundreds and thousands of women who are a part of what's happening with breast implants and getting the truth out there. And you and I have spoken about this before with different subjects. And we've been trying to get informed consent to no avail here in Florida. However, I think it's very interesting because Robin is over in Arizona. So she woke up early so that she could be on this call. And she's
well,
in Arizona.
Thank you for joining us.
And
yeah.
I know. And they were able to get a bill passed, and so was Michigan, just 3 weeks later. And I was like, gosh, the states that have the worst issues going on right now, they were able to get their representatives to do something to stand up and step up for women's health.
Excellent.
So I really would like for Robin to tell us more about how they went about getting it. And she has been helping the other groups and other states because each one of us has our own states because we have our own state legislation. So she's helping get other people kind of on the same page and trying to say, hey, here's what we did. Here's how we did it. And their bill is great. It's a great model. Now, Robin, is it four or five other states already have it? I know four.
Six states right now. I do want to clarify, Michigan hasn't passed yet, but we have a sponsor secured for our bill there, and things are looking really good. But in Arizona, we actually started this in Arizona like 2 years ago, and we were in the last stages of having our bill signed into law, and COVID hit and shut down our legislative session in Arizona. So we had gone unanimously through the Senate committee. We went unanimously to the Senate floor, unanimously to the House committee, and then our bill died on the House floor because we had no more government sessions. So that was a bummer. So this year, when the legislative session started, I'm happy to say that our bill was the very first one to be introduced and passed. So obviously it happened very quickly, but we had already done a lot of the legwork from the year before. So we are excited that Arizona was the first one that was signed into law by our governor just a few weeks ago here. So
that's wonderful. I got to jump in just for a second. We got a little bit of background noise. Sure. You want to turn off your computers because there's a little delay on the sound. So definitely talk to your cell phones. And secondly, and Robin, you definitely continue on here. But I want to get a little background for people just so they know why, what the law is doing in disclosure and why it's necessary. If we can do a really quick synopsis of what breast implants are fast, and then we'll take as much time as you want, but and what the problems are. And then and why we need disclosure and what's going on. So let's give folks that don't know anything about this issue a quick little synopsis of why you're doing what you're doing. Anne, do you want to start?
Well, sure. Oh, Anne is starting? Okay.
Or anybody can. You're all free to jump in at
any
time.
Well, I was going to say, why don't we let Terry or Carrie?
Okay, that's
fine.
Yeah. I'm the newest. Carrie's in Florida with me, and Carrie's in Texas.
Okay.
So I think I'm the newest member to the clan, and the reason why it was so important, I think, is because, you know, when women get sick, they have a list of symptoms, but the symptoms don't point to a medically documented disease. It's been covered up for years, and Anne and Robin can go into the cover-up of that, but, you know, it's when you're sick like that, you don't know where to start. And nobody should have to, I was lucky enough to stumble upon and to kind of get me through the loopholes and actually identify what was important. And so the medical community, as well as family and the women who are going through this, don't need to be facing a brick wall. They need to get it fixed and get it cured and move on. It just needs to be aware. Awareness needs to be brought more to implants and the dangers, and it, but at the same time, it doesn't affect everybody the same way, right? So,
yeah. Well, what are some of the dangers? People know what we're dealing
so the
with. Yeah.
There's a list of symptoms, but because because breast implant illness isn't classified as a disease, doctors, the medical community, and individuals, they're running in circles. And in my specific case, I was running around with a bag of pills. I had insomnia. I had anxiety. I was diagnosed with, I was on ADHD medicine for 10 years, and it was like a cluster, but then when they would run tests, they'd be like, well, I don't even know why you're experiencing this. And it wasn't until many years later where I had a friend Google all of the, and research all of my symptoms and ask me, have you heard of breast implant illness? And it matched my implant history to a T. And, I mean, getting rashes and bruises just randomly, and brain fog was horrible. You couldn't think, you couldn't feel. Poor Anne. I think Anne has noticed a difference in me as well from the time she first talked to me to now. I was a squirrel, man. You'd have to tell me, get out of the rat race, get out of the rat race. And, you know, I had my explant surgery December 15th.
For explants removal? Of the implants?
Yes.
Okay. The definitions,
explant removal was where they removed the implants. I did not have implants put back in, but they had to remove my breast tissue because I had silicone in the breast tissue and also had leaked into my lymph nodes. And nobody had been able to identify it because there's no awareness to it. And the plastic surgeons, after you look into it, the plastic surgeons weren't held accountable because the FDA didn't shove the information out there properly to us women who were getting implants. We were told they were safe. We were told that there was no issues. And in my
heard
case,
that before.
My specific case, I actually had the doctor that did my radiology say, oh, you have a snowstorm, which means a lot of silicone in your lymph nodes, but all these symptoms are in your head. That's not right. When women are sick and they need education, and the only way you're going to get education is if you have awareness. And then that's where, you know, once I started feeling better, I started clicking off to Anne like, hey, and she's like, okay, good, you finally got it, because I was able to focus on my health. And I'll tell you what, within I am off all of my medications. Even I'm able to sleep without Ambien. I have a very go travel job. I'm in a different city every week, and I have not had any focus issues whatsoever, and I'm off all my prescription medications.
Well, congratulations. As people just want to speak, if you just announce your first name. Yeah, who's ever going to just say this is, you know, give your first name. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, yeah.
I was just going to say, Terry, if Terry can jump in, and Terry, if you can give like a three-minute overview of breast implants in the past and how we've gotten to this point, I think that's what he's looking for right now.
Okay, this is Terry Diaz, and basically breast implants, back in the day, you know, you heard dangers of silicone implants and how they, you know, how they affected women and how sick women would get. And then they took and did a moratorium on breast implants and stopped the sale of them, or stopped, you know, letting women have breast implants because of all the illnesses. But then, you know, who's better at this is probably Robin, because I don't have the dates. What I really wanted to talk about was the informed consent and why it's so necessary. That's really what's close to my heart. So, Robin, if you want to jump in real quick and give the real details of breast implants and how it all started, and then I'll be happy to explain the informed consent part.
Sure. Yeah, this is Robin Tout in Arizona again. And basically how we got here is after the FDA had banned the silicone implants back in the 90s, the manufacturers were ruthless in harassing the FDA to get them back to market. Unfortunately, they were given bogus, very small studies by doctors and physicians who had a conflict of interest, who made money off of implants. I actually went back and read the transcripts from 2003 and 2005 of the FDA advisory hearings when the information was presented to the FDA so that they could make a decision whether or not to put implants back on the market. When you read those transcripts, they are identical verbatim to our testimonies from March of 2019 when 80 of us went to the FDA telling them that we have the same symptoms that these women had 35 years ago. This has been going on for 60 years, and how it's gone on so long without people knowing is a big part of that is the FDA was hiding over 446,000 adverse event reports of women who were sick and harmed by breast implants. So if someone, a doctor, a patient, which nobody really does, but if you were to go on the FDA website and look at their MAUDE database where people report adverse events for like drugs, devices, vaccines, you're supposed to report all of that to the FDA. And if you looked at their data, it looked like breast implants were relatively safe. However, they were hiding behind another wall, these alternative summary reports where they were letting the manufacturers group together huge sums of adverse event reports. And once we uncovered that in March of 2019, the number shot up from, oh, only 5,000 women a year are having problems with breast implants to almost 50,000 women a year. And that's just in the United States. That's a huge discrepancy. So this all came to light in 2019, and we spent 2 days at the FDA hearing explaining we are all sick. I mean, I know the narrative for the last 30 years has been it's all in our head, these women are crazy, but we have social media now, and it is impossible for me to not know anybody in Australia, yet there's women there that have the exact same story as me. And I was a breast cancer patient, so I had a double mastectomy. I didn't have any other treatment. I didn't have chemo or radiation. I had my implants for reconstruction, and
that's
crazy
what I want to get to
sounds,
because
I felt,
that seems the most medically necessary reason for doing this. I'm not sure of the other reasons. We can get into the psychological and all kinds of the cosmetic surgery, but reconstruction from cancer seems to me the most logical reason to do this. What are the medical reasons for doing this other than that?
Personally, I think the narrative is reconstruction, obviously, when you've had your breast removed for a mastectomy, or some women are born with a breast deformity. So maybe one is bigger than the other and they want to fix that. So they put a little implant in, you know, to increase size. Honestly, this is not a medically necessary device. Even for I have no breasts. I've been this way for 4 years and I'm living a fulfilling and happy and perfect life. So, but I wasn't when I had implants, you know, for reconstruction. I felt like I was dying.
Wow.
So it's pretty bold for someone like me to sit here and say, you know, I would rather have my life my eyelashes, my hair, my health than to have breasts because I had no quality of life. I mean, I went from walking 5 to 7 miles a day to not even be able to walk around the block. I had to call my husband one time to come pick me up. And I'd been walking, you know, at least 5 miles a day for 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've had cancer 3 times in my life, but breast implants took me down way worse than any of my cancers did.
Is it because they leak? Is that the biggest problem with them, or are there other problems?
No.
There's lots of problems. I mean, it's a...
I'm sorry. They don't it's a core object.
All right. We'll take you one at a time. Obviously, I've got to hop
on
Ann.
This is Ann in Florida. Okay. So I'm a former plastic surgeon scrub tech, and I told women how safe they were. Why? Because back in the early 1990s, when I was getting my implants, I asked questions. And the plastic surgeon who I worked for, he was, they're safe. The women just want money, and they showed me their studies. They're like, see, they're safe. They showed them to me. The manufacturer's sales reps knew what was going on, and they armed their reps to go in to educate the doctors how safe they were. When they weren't, they didn't talk about what the shell of the implant is made of, and all implants have a silicone shell. So it doesn't matter if you're silicone gel or you're saline, you have silicone in you because the shell is silicone. We're talking 37 to 43 different products put together, heavy metals, formaldehyde, printer's ink. Platinum in of itself is a metal, and it causes cancer. So there's a lot more to this than people realize. And I feel bad for all the women I told, these are safe. Well, I got deathly ill from mine. And mine were, my first set was silicone gel because that's what they were putting in us back then. And then I switched them out for saline. Well, I didn't know that when you switch them or you even remove them back then, you're supposed to take the capsule out. It's a scar tissue that forms around the implant to help protect your body from your body's just natural response. And if you don't remove that capsule, you're leaving those poisons from that shell in the body. So there's a lot to this that goes forward that people just don't understand, and that's why we feel it's so important to get informed consent. And informed consent, I'm going to pass that back over to Terry here in Florida as well.
Okay.
Okay, this is Terry Diaz from Florida. Yeah. So the reason why informed consent is so important, like Anne was saying, in recent years they have found that actual implants are causing a man-made cancer, and the silicone shell, even in the manufacturer's pamphlet, it does say that there is such a thing as gel bleed, which means that the silicone is bleeding into the surrounding tissues. When I had my implants, I had them for cosmetic reasons, and I was only told that if I had a high, you know, impact accident, that the only complication would be possible rupture, but that doesn't happen very often. And it was just mostly about, like, the surgery itself. That was my informed consent. Just, okay, this is what happens when you have breast implants and your high impact. So when I got sick and, you know, chased my tail like all these other women, you know, my story is no different than hundreds of thousands of women that are just looking for the answer because it's a different kind of sickness. It's something you cannot really explain other than you feel like you're dying, and that is, you know, a very common way of describing it. So I lost my business. I am in the process of losing my house. I lost, 10 years of my life with my children because I was on, you know, a sick bed basically the whole time. I was very, very ill. And had I been informed in the beginning of what health complications could happen, I still probably would have got my implants, but the difference is I would have been able to say, hey, oh, I'm starting to get sick. And maybe not right away, but I would probably correlate it to that, and I wouldn't have lost 10 years of my, you know, life. So that is the point of why myself, like why I got involved in the informed consent process, because I feel like it's just fair for women to know, you know, what they're getting into. It's fair for them to have the knowledge so they can make that decision for themselves. We're not against against breast implants for women that choose to do it for themselves, but they have the right to know what they're putting in their body and what it could cause, cancers, illnesses, et cetera. So.
This is very similar to my crusade against the messenger RNA genetic modification shot they're calling a vaccine. And so I see great parallels to this. The FDA to me is nothing but a marketing organization for big pharma.
Correct.
So you got a sympathetic audience here. I call Dr. Fauci Dr. Fascist. He's one of the most evil men on the planet. So I see a lot of things going on here. Is there any follow-up? In other words, once you have breast implants, do you have a regular, like an annual checkup or every couple of years or anything to let you know what might happen over time with these things?
There is not. My implants I'd put in the, I had the silicone removed because they leak, or not the silicone, the saline safety valve, it deflated. So I got FDA approved for silicone because that was back when what they were talking about earlier. There was a study, and I was part of that case study. I did not get one follow-up. And when I called the plastic surgeon, and in 2014, I found out that those implants that were involved in the case study had ruptured. Yeah. So, no, there is no follow-up. There wasn't for me.
Well, and most of our women that are sick, they're not going back to plastic surgeons. They're at the neurologist because having neurological issues, headaches, migraines. They're at the pulmonologist because they can't breathe because the implants are crushing their lungs. So the worst part of all of this is our women are sick and they're hopping from doctor to doctor, and these doctors are not aware that breast implants cause these issues. Most of them don't even know their patient has breast implants. So what do? They throw pills at their patients, pharma, pharma, pharma. And we're stuck, holding the bag of pills and illness and still nothing, no answers until we found, groups of women on social media that are all having the same problems. And they realize they get better when they take their breast implants out. So, there's been a huge, it's been, probably one of the biggest cover-ups. And plastic surgeons will say, breast implants are the most studied device ever on the planet. But, those are the same plastic surgery societies who are not holding their members accountable for registering patients into the National Breast Implant Database. All surgeons have to do if a woman comes in to get breast implants is fill out a few questions and she gets put in the breast implant registry. And that way we can track people's symptoms. We can understand this disease better. We can let them know if there's been a recall on the product. Well, in 2019, there were over 299,000 breast implant surgeries, and our plastic surgeon societies in the United States only registered 3,900 patients. And they won't make it mandatory. They let their surgeons decide to do the right thing and register patients, and they're not. And then we have Australia, who has over 90% surgeon participation rate because they're taking care of their patients. So, they say they want to help, and they're on all these task force and these BII, doing studies. But if they're not even registering patients into that registry to track them, they're not going to get the data they need to understand this illness, and it's going to drag on for another 20 or 30 years. They also won't hold their surgeons accountable for presenting the information that we're asking for and these laws that we're passing, legislation for informed consent. Basically, the surgeons have had the chance to do the right thing. They have chosen not to. Their societies won't mandate it, so we have to go to our state governments, our local governments, and we have to mandate it state by state.
Yep.
Interesting. I got to jump in just again. We're getting a little technical issues. The person that spoke just before, the woman who just spoke, and like I say, if you give first names, I'll be able to track this better. But someone's got their phone is on and their computer is on, and we're getting some feedback. I want to get you guys the best quality recording you can so that you can share this, as much as possible. So if someone is listening to this on the computer or something, we're getting a feedback from one of the lines. I think it was the previous person that spoke. And again, please just give me first names when you join in. Okay.
Yeah. Is that better? It was my wireless mouse. I closed the computer, but I think the mouse is picking it up. Okay. Is that better?
Yeah, that's much better. Good. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Is there product liability for this at all? Because I just wrote a bill, speaking of bills, that amends section, I think it's Title 42, Section 300AA, which was the original Vaccine Act, that puts full product liability back on vaccine manufacturers. Is there an equivalent product liability immunity, for example, with breast implants? And should we be looking at the possible legislation there to put the liability back on them, you know, for this? Anybody want that one?
Yes. This is Robin.
Okay, Robin.
We were working on the Medical Device Safety Act, which is federal legislation to hold the implant manufacturers accountable for this mess mm-hmm. that's been created. We didn't get a lot of traction or support in D.C. Terry Diaz and I both went to D.C. twice to lobby for this. And, you know, it felt like we were being heard and people were excited and on board, and then it never got any traction.
That's
part
Washington.
Of why I started doing – Yeah, that yeah. was in Washington, D.C. And then yeah. part of why I started doing stuff in Arizona is I felt like maybe I'd have more cooperation and get more traction on a bill here. The interesting part about the liability that you talked about is mm-hmm. when they put silicone implants back on the market, the manufacturers are now enjoying federal preemption. So that's why you don't see any – we have hundreds of thousands, if not in the millions now, of sick women, and everyone's asking, where are the class action lawsuits? But when they put them back on the market, they classified them as a Class 3 medical device, which means they enjoy federal preemption. And anyone who tries to sue them, basically it gets thrown out in court. It's a really long, difficult road. We've had a couple lawsuits go through that had some little tidbits that we could use, you know, to get around preemption. But they knew what they were doing, and the FDA is protecting them. So it is nearly impossible to get any accountability or liability from the FDA or the manufacturers.
And this
feminist
is
groups, are they joining in at all? Oh. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, well, I was going to say, this is Terry Diaz. Yeah. And yeah. one of the things that the FDA has done is they sent out those manufacturers were supposed to do post-market approvals. And as you mm-hmm. heard, most of them did not follow up or finish their studies. And the FDA actually sent out 2 years ago, all four manufacturers have warning letters that state that they are supposed to finish their studies, but that's as far as it got. It's the 2 years, they just got warning letters, and they were supposed to be completed within 10 to 11 days to have some sort of solution, and it's still just no answer.
Who makes these?
I emailed the
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Ann.
Yeah.
Oh,
Ann?
Who was emailing somebody?
This is Robin. We have a delay.
It's normal. Yeah, this is Action Radio. We'll get y'all. You know, just take your turns, and we'll get through. Robin.
So I emailed my contact at the FDA 2 weeks ago because it was the anniversary of the two first warning letters that were sent out. Because basically, all four breast implant manufacturers are in violation of their FDA approval right now, and nothing's being done about it.
Who are these people?
So this would be Mentor, who's owned by Johnson & Johnson, Allergan, who was bought out by AbbVie, Sientra is one of the smaller implant manufacturers, and Ideal Implant. And all four of them, and we also have Motiva, but they're in clinical trials right now in the United States, and so they don't technically have approval yet. And neither do the other four. These devices are not FDA approved. They were given pre-market approval, and they were told to follow strict conditions in order to get their regular approval. And part of that was, like Terry said, completing those long-term safety studies. Well, mm-hmm. they lost over half the patients in those studies because if women were sick and started reporting that on those forms, they were dropped from the study. So, you know, there's just a lot that's been hidden and covered up, and people don't realize the behind-the-scenes stuff, but when we're sitting here and it's been 2 years since our FDA hearing and still nothing's being done, all four manufacturers are in violation. And I was told by my FDA contact, we don't have anything to share publicly at this time. It's been 2 years. How long
is they're stonewalling. They don't care.
Continue to market and sell. Yeah.
Yeah. It's how much money are these people making? And we'll get to the law in just a little bit, but how what's the profit margin for breast implants? Or how much are we talking about?
It costs $5 or $10 to make an implant, and then they charge approximately $1,800 to $2,300. It's Ann, sorry.
That's okay.
And
no.
That's how much they charge for the implant themselves, and then the surgeon's fee to put them in. And you're looking at an hour to an hour and a half to place these implants. So it's a high profit margin. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought so. Okay.
One of the other things I wanted to jump back to the legal side is a friend of mine is a retired civil civil attorney and for civil rights, and he's retired, and so he's been kind of breaking some stuff down with me. What we've come up with is the silicone, it's harder for the people to get the lawsuits to go through because of what happened with the Dow Corning. And
what happened with that?
The things that they did, the Dow Corning settled, and the women had to prove they had autoimmune disease, but the manufacturers did not have to state that implants cause autoimmune disease. But yet, in order for them to get their money, they had to prove through a rheumatologist that they had an autoimmune disease. So to me, that was a catch-22. So he and I were breaking it down. Then you have in 2000, when saline was grandfathered in to say that they were safe, grandfathered in, not any kind of PMA then, but in 2000 they said,
PMA?
Well, we're going to grandfather them in, pre-market approval. We're going to say that they're safe, and women can have their saline while they're waiting for silicone to get back on the market. Well, anybody who had their saline implants placed prior to 2000, you don't fall under PMA, pre-market approval. You fall under Schedule K, which is easier to sue for. And if you can prove that there is a fraud and concealment, then you can have a case go forward. The problem is the attorneys, when we call and talk to them, many of them can't separate the issues with a manufacturer faulty valve, which is what over 80%, I've had two experts say this to me, over 80% of the Mentor implants are believed to have a manufacturer faulty valve. I'm being careful with my words so that I can make sure I'm saying it right.
No, you're fine. Yeah.
And then Allergan, which used to
be
owned by McGann, they have between 50 and 70% of known faulty valves. Faulty valves is a way, in my opinion, in my friend's opinion, to get a case to go forward, and it may open the door for all implants to go forward. Because if you can prove that they had a manufacturer faulty valve, which was known, and there are documents proving that that is a true statement I'm making, then you should be able to go forth with a lawsuit, and fraud and concealment takes your time off the table.
What's a faulty valve?
A valve that leaks both directions. And mine was actually caught on my mammo films. You can see stuff sucking in my implant. You can see stuff pushing out, but my implants didn't deflate.
Why
so
do they have a valve at all? What's the
my
valve
body
for?
Fluid.
I thought these were like self-contained.
To fill the saline, once they put the saline in your body. So they put the implant in, it's flat. They have to put a tube in it through the valve to fill it up.
Okay.
And then
now
it feels
so
like a
problem.
Deflated balloon.
Okay.
Yes.
I always imagine they went in, you know, as they were going to be. This is why I need you guys to clear all this up for me. Okay, interesting. No, trust me when I say I have no experience with these.
Sucked in and out stuff, and I at some point breathed in mold, is what they're believing, and mine became an incubator for Mercer, which is a very strong form of staph infection, and mold. And every time they did a mammogram on me, because my mother had breast cancer as well as ovarian cancer, so they were watching me carefully, and I would be complaining of breast pain, so they would do a mammogram. At the time, we believed they were safe back then. And you can see stuff blowing out of my implant, and you can see stuff sucking back in, and it's all caught on film.
Wow. And is that enough for a lawsuit?
I have a set of moldy implants.
I need to get in touch with we have a legal expert, Jonathan Mosley. He's a criminal defense attorney. He does a legal report Thursdays. He also works with Larry Klayman at Freedom Watch. And so maybe there's if they can't help, at least get you in the right direction of a class action lawsuit. This is what these guys do. I'm in radio. I know people. That's really cool.
All right, let's do it.
Let me see if I can get you guys connected and see what everybody can come up with here. I got one nasty question, then I want to get into the actual Arizona law. You don't have to answer this, but how much pressure from men is there on women to get breast implants? In other words, hey, baby, if you just did this for me, you know, I'll love you forever. I mean, I'll just be blunt and just get it out there. How much is that affecting?
Okay, this is Ian. I'm just going to tell you, my husband's a butt man, so he's no pressure at all, and I had mine before I met him.
Glad we got that out there. But
this is Terry.
And my
Sherry?
Husband, same thing. He had no interest in me getting breast implants at all. It was all me. It's society
okay.
pressure. It's okay. not, I don't, me personally.
Okay.
That's scary. My first thing, when I very first got my first set, one was bigger than the other, so I went in to, like we were originally talking about, to get them fixed.
Mm-hmm.
When I started getting sick the first time, I didn't identify it. When they were ruptured in 2014, I wanted them removed in just a lift. But my plastic surgeon and my significant other at the time talked me into actually going bigger. Yes, I did not have a backbone back then, but I think the moral of this whole topic is everybody's situation, again, is different. So, you know, there's going to be women that get them because they have cancer. There's going to be women that want to get them for cosmetic reasons. There's going to be women who get them because they had to have their breasts removed at one point. And I think it was Robin, when I first talked to Robin, that said she was sicker with her implants than she was with cancer. Robin
mm-hmm.
was that. Yeah, and so, I mean, it's
absolutely true.
It's at the end of the day where if everybody is getting them for different reasons, but at the end of the day, we're all getting, you know, there are women getting sick. And again, it's not that we're wanting to ban implants, because I have friends that have them and don't have any issues. But at least let the women make an informed decision. It's no different with, when women have cancer. They are able to identify the cancer because there's information, there's awareness. It's the same thing. And it goes down to like what Ann is saying, and I think it was Terry was saying, the implant companies weren't being held responsible into the plastic surgeons not having to be responsible. And now we have a lot of women, tons and thousands of women that are wrapped in this tangled web of confusion of what to do. And we just want to untangle the web.
Okay. No, it makes. I love what you're doing. It makes perfect sense. Let's get into the actual law itself. What did the need for disclosure? What do you want to disclose, and what does Arizona's law do? Who wants that one?
So Arizona's law. The funny thing about the law is everything that is in the statute is actually mm-hmm. either on the FDA website or in the patient information booklet from the manufacturer. So we're not asking for anything new or different. We're just
okay.
asking for the information that we were supposed to be entitled to in the first place. And going back, way back to the PMAs, the pre-market approval agreement for the FDA, Section 6 on every single manufacturer's PMA states that a patient needs to be given proper informed consent with this patient information guide. I did a poll in some of the groups, and over 86% of women were never given that booklet. If I was given that booklet as a breast cancer patient, I would have tossed it in the trash, walked out, and gone on with my life. There's no way I would have seen that list of chemicals and put that in my body. And
right.
that's one of the biggest parts of the Arizona law is to disclose the list of ingredients that is in breast implants. I had no idea the list of metals. Like, I can't wear cheap earrings that have nickel in them because, you know,
mm-hmm.
my ears will get infected. Yet there was nickel in my breast implants. I mean, there's lead,
yep.
mercury, arsenic. These are chemicals that have been banned from lead paint back in the 70s. We all know what happened. I mean, I don't know
what
kids
purpose
were, you know, maybe toys.
But what purpose does this heavy toxic metal serve in a breast implant? Why are they there?
They're there because the manufacturing process, when you mix those metals together and heat them up, they become cohesive and they become like a strong rubber casing around the implant, so that they make up the shell. And then, of course, the silicone gel is inside. If you look
right.
at when implants were banned, the Dow Corning implants, they were very runny, almost like melted jello. And so what plastic surgeons and the FDA thought was the problem was that they were leaking, and that was the problem. So let's make an implant that doesn't leak. So they made the gummy bear implants that are more cohesive. And plastic surgeons will show you in their office, they'll cut one in half. And they literally look like a gummy bear candy when you cut it in half, and it's not spilling juice anywhere. But you put that in a body at 98.6 degrees, and those gels soften up. And
it's still breaking
they don't
down,
even,
right?
I only had my implants for 4 months. They weren't ruptured. They weren't leaking. They weren't broken. It's the gel bleed that was leaking into my body that was causing me such horrific health problems.
Gel bleed is one of the things that's not only on the FDA website, it's in the patient information book, but the doctors don't tell the patients about
so
gel
the information's bleed. There. So let me get this straight. The information's there. The FDA, I don't know if they require the information to be available, but they're not specifically giving it to women before the surgery. So what you're saying is they have to do that. They have to give you the list of everything that's in the implant and the disclosure and the possible adverse side effects, right? I mean, this seems like a normal disclosure for any medical procedure, except vaccinations,
yep.
But we'll talk about that another
exactly
time.
That's exactly right.
Okay. All right.
This is Anne. One of the things that is wrong with everything is that the information booklet that's supposedly supposed to go to the patient, one is given to them after the fact. Why? Because it's in the sterile sealed box prior to surgery. Well, we don't open it until you're in surgery. So that was one of the things. Then, as they mentioned earlier, the length of the booklet. You got 43 to 90 pages. Who really is going to read that? If a woman wants implants, she's going to say, okay, anything the doctor puts in front of her to sign because she wants her implants. But the doctor's not going over it, and that's one of the biggest things that we're wanting to happen.
Right.
Yeah,
I don't know how you require that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's how we require that is we developed a patient doctor checklist, and it was developed with my Arizona Society of Plastic Surgeons, as well as group of patients. And basically it is everything that the harm patients wish they knew that their doctor didn't tell them. And so we've created, it's only 7 pages long, and yes, it's not in replacement to the manufacturer's information, which can be anywhere from 76 to 90 pages. But if you're not going to read that booklet, you at least need to read and sign off on these 7 pages because this is what your doctor won't tell you. And now we're basically mandating that the doctor does tell you, and both you and the doctor need to sign off on that. So
and who gets the copies of that? Does the patient get a copy so they know they have that something to take with them or no? And is it done before surgery,
yes,
like maybe a couple of weeks ahead of time so people can think about it?
At their first consultation visit.
Okay.
Yep.
That's what we're
wanting. So that they have time to think
about it. It's not happening.
Okay.
This is Carrie. Even when I was part of the study in the early 2000s from the saline to the silicone, I didn't get anything to read over. I got a form that says, I am consenting this doctor to put a trial silicone implant in. I didn't get a list of what the history was, why they were doing the. And again, I mean, I should have done my due research, but you know, you go to the doctor trusting your doctor. You shouldn't have to do the research.
Oh.
Shouldn't have to.
I had heart surgery. I got 5 opinions. I didn't trust anybody.
I didn't get a list of what they were made of. I didn't get a history of it. I didn't, there was none of that. It was, hey, you know what? We're trying these new implants out. They're going to be great. They're safe. And you get to be one of the first ones to prove that they're safe. So, yeah, we saw how that went.
Yeah. But this is catching on, though, the disclosure laws. And do you want to do something in Florida? We've still got, I think, a few weeks left of our session. Is anybody picking up on this?
So far, no. I keep asking, especially our newest members aren't wanting to. They're new. They're considered juniors, and they don't really want to do anything. However, if we can get them to understand, this isn't reinventing the wheel. This actually could be something very good for your career. I think they might listen, and maybe at the next session they'll at least put it in for us.
Yeah, I did invite
Carrie,
one representative.
What's your opinion? Since you're in Florida too.
Yeah. Terry?
This is Terry. Yes, I have written at least 40 letters to all different of the legislators from the health committee to, my local legislation here in Orlando, and I've gotten 4 letters back. That's it. Just thank you so much for contacting our office, but nothing. I just feel like if we got face-to-face with somebody and just explained and, so that they could see that we're real people, we're women that, are asking for some, informed consent legislation, and it protects them or it protects the manufacturers or no, it protects the plastic surgeons and it protects the patient. So it's a win-win for two sides.
Well, I tried contacting, she's not my representative, but she's really good, and she was on the show before she ran. That's Michelle Saltzman. who's over in Pensacola, and I invited her to the show. I'm going to send her the podcast of this afterwards. So maybe you guys can talk to Ann afterwards, and maybe we can get connected there as well, because there's this is something that definitely needs action. There's one more thing I was thinking of, malpractice. Has anybody gone after the plastic surgeons themselves for malpractice, for not informing you, or for these things happening?
This is Terry, and I'm in the process of that.
Okay.
But not everybody's case can go after the surgeon.
Right.
Yeah.
Not in everybody's can do that. I went to the same surgeon twice, and neither one of those surgeries did he convey to me, even after he removed the ruptured case study plants. It did not assist me at all.
Okay.
Didn't inform me or anything that could be, an issue.
Okay.
He just wanted me to go bigger.
Yeah. Do they want upgrades? I mean, do they say, well, you're this size now, you'll be even better if you get this size,
yes.
The new improved version, the 2022 version. Yeah. They do that. They're trying to upgrade. That's like, oh, God.
Yeah.
They sound like used car
salesmen. They typically go bigger. Yeah. They typically go much bigger than women ask for. And they wake up with, I woke up with double the size I asked for. And
that's malpractice right there.
I very well could have sued my surgeon. Here was my thought process for me personally.
Uh-huh.
She probably has a lot more money than I do. She can afford better lawyers than me. And I think malpractice suits are pretty difficult, I did have in my doctor's note, she even wrote in there, the patient wishes to go small size-wise, but she didn't write down like a cup size or how many cc's. So how do you prove like her version of small and my version of small might be
right.
Different? I was thinking an A cup because I was naturally, I had double D's and I hated them. So I was like, okay, yay, I get to have a mastectomy and pick the ones I want. Right. So I want to go small. And
okay.
I woke up with basically what I got rid of. So I was horrified, that she put these huge, breast implants back, when I was, looking forward to being smaller. So, and a lot of surgeons do that because they'll tell the patients, well, I think these look better on your frame, or they'll tell the patients, oh, I always have women that come back and wish they went bigger. So I just went ahead and did it for you. So you didn't have to come back and have another surgery.
I know better than you.
They do that.
You're
a
only
lot.
The patient. Yeah. Is there a difference between women?
Yeah.
Well, doctors, that is God complex anyway. Is there a difference between women plastic surgeons and men plastic surgeons in terms of information or concern or care or profit mm-hmm. motive or any of those things?
Mine was a woman, and she is horrific.
Okay.
Who is that? My plastic surgeon here in Arizona.
No, your first name? So
okay, Robin, I didn't know who it was.
Robin, I'm sorry. That's okay.
Oh, yeah.
We got four of you.
Now,
people can keep track.
This is Ann, and I've worked for several plastic surgeons, and in my opinion, it depends on the plastic surgeon because the one that I refer to here for the locals, Dr. Chandler, he's a teaching plastic surgeon who used to teach at the University of Kansas. His specialty is reconstruction of the breast using your own body tissue after mastectomy. And he's a microsurgeon, and he trained at MD Anderson with one of the leading doctors of the cancer caused by breast implants, the BIA-ALCL, Breast Implant-Associated Anaplastic Large Cell Lymphoclement. And Dr. Chandler, he prefers not to put implants in. If he can find your body fat anywhere on you, he would rather reconstruct or take your implants out and put fat back in the place if that's what you're wanting, rather than do any form of implant. That's just his personality.
I don't know if you want to mention specific doctors. I want to be careful about that just because.
Oh, okay.
But that's all right. No, it sounds like you're mentioning favorably, so I'm not worried about that. But you raised a huge issue, alternatives to breast implants. I didn't know there were any.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, for instance.
That's been used prior to implants, and then that's how they kind of came up with the implants. If you've never seen breast men and Two Small Voices, I highly recommend you watch Two Small Voices first, then watch Breast Men. And Two Small Voices is a great movie. It tells the history of the Dow Corning lawsuits. And then the Breast Men is a funny
take on how the plastic surgeons at first were mad at the women who sued in the Dow, but then they were like, oh my God, this is a moneymaker. We still take implants out. Let's come on. And they kind of make a funny version of it. But the two together tell the history of what happened with breast implants.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So you could get like liposuction and then use that as replacement tissue for instead of a breast implant.
Yes, and it's important that you see a surgeon who, in my opinion, is a microsurgeon because they put it in slow and steady and with a smaller cannula versus a doctor who is just a plastic surgeon who's not maybe as adept in putting the fat transfer in. The best analogy I can give is you have a nice thick stack of pancakes and you put a little slab of butter on them and then you drizzle some syrup and you've got the perfect formation of a beautiful pancake breakfast. But if that lid falls off while you're dumping the syrup on, now you got this big glob, and what does it do? Flattens all your pancakes. That's the best analogy I can give. A regular plastic surgeon who's not adept in putting fat transfer in, they may put it in too fast or too much at one time, and therefore it doesn't stay. You got 50 to 70% of it dissipating. And then the ones who put it in as a microsurgeon are slow and steady, theirs typically stay, and your breasts look great.
Interesting.
Well, this is Terry, and actually helped me find a surgeon that explanted mine, and we discussed doing the fat transfer. In fact, my appointment, follow-up appointment, is this Friday on the 16th. I will get to talk about, you know, because when I had my removed and all the breast tissue, I actually walked out inverted. I'm inverted.
What's that mean?
So, and the implant actually dented my ribs, my rib cage. That's why it looks like it's a bowl on my chest now. So I'm kind of excited about that. So, Ann, I will keep you updated on that.
yes, please.
Ann, like I said, yeah, and he is a microsurgeon. He started out as an ER graft surgeon. I didn't know that when we went to go sit, and I say Ann went with me because I had her on speakerphone and she actually did most of the talking because I was so sick I couldn't even think straight.
So this is fascinating. So plastic surgeons maybe shouldn't be doing this, maybe microsurgeons, and I'm not even sure, you know, how the differences work. So where can women go for more information about this? Where's the best place? And then
we
hear about
several
your group.
Sites.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's hear
them. This is Robin again, just real quick, in the spirit of informed consent, I do want to point out that fat transfer is relatively new. I think they've been doing it with breast cancer patients for many years, but it's relatively new in the augmentation world. There are no long-term studies on the fat transfer, and it is known to interfere with mammography if you're screening for breast cancer, especially women that are, you know, they have the BRCA gene and might be a high-risk case. So there are definitely some issues that women should educate themselves on with fat transfer. But again, this is why informed consent is key.
Yep.
It all comes down to informed consent. And
what's the Arizona law?
This is relatively new. It hasn't been studied. Yeah. And then just know that information up front and know that you're taking your chances with your health. But as long as you have the information up front and you're willing to take that risk, that's all we're asking, is for women to have that information.
That makes perfect sense. What's the Arizona law or bill number? Where can people find this? Please post it on my page,
and we'll find out
more about this and the group. I got a 30-day ban because it's a long story. Anyway, I can't post on my own site, but you guys can.
I'll post it.
So you post it for me. Yeah, I have the best people in the world posting all over my site. So we've got a minute and 30 seconds left. Group names, websites, any information, phone numbers, anything you want to give. This would be a good time to do it so people can have a record of it.
This is Terry, and there's a closed Facebook group. This is Terry from Florida, and there's a closed Facebook group that is called the Breast Implant Illness Florida Support Group. That is one way to start. And then I know Ann has her committee.
Yep. So mine's a nonprofit, the Implant Truth Survivors Committee. We're a 501c3. We're a public page, so we put public information out. And then so Robin also has a group.
Robin?
So there's the Arizona Breast Implant Illness and Information Group, and then we also have two public pages, Breast Implant Safety Alliance, and recently Terry and I started the Global Patient Advocacy Coalition, GPAC, and we're taking this global.
we are taking this not only to our states, but we're taking this federal and we're taking this global, because we want to make sure every single woman around the world is informed and has proper informed consent.
We may hear from this show, too, because we've been heard in 70 countries up to this point. Not all at the same time, but you never know. Word gets around. So, yeah, if you all want to come back in 3 months and check in, or 6 months, or whatever you think is necessary, I'd like to make this a regular feature. We'll keep featuring these laws, see where they're going, see which states are doing it. And we only have about 20 seconds left, so let me just thank all of you. Let me see, we got Terry, Carrie, Robin, Ann. I hope I got you all right. And this has been fabulous. Thank you so much for coming on. We got about 10 seconds.
Anna? Thanks, Greg. We appreciate
you
having us.
Thank you.
You guys are the best.
Thanks
okay,
for
podcast.
Having us.
Oh, of course, absolutely. Podcasts will be ready in about 5 to 10 minutes after the show, so you can pick it up at the site. Ann's got the site. There's nothing more I can say. You guys said it all. It's been wonderful. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock Central Time, with another exciting adventure in Action Radio.